Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
Now more college football talk with the king of college football. It's the Chuck Oliver Show on Southern Sports Today.
Hour two of the Chuck Oliver Show on a Monday during the season, and it's October, brother. We got people getting fired. Am I missing anybody? Who's been fired? Nebraska? Georgia Tech and Arizona State. And now we've had another case of a school firing a former player. Like, Scott Frost left an undefeated national championship. I did finger quotes. Situation to go home and save his alma mater. And they're like, yeah, you got to get on out of here. You and your wife and the dog and your mama and whoever's here, everybody out. Wisconsin just did that, Paul Christ. I'm not saying it's the wrong. I haven't commented. I'm just relaying a fact. And then Colorado fired Carl Durrell. Dan, will you help me with some math? I am looking at Carl Durrell's contract right now because Colorado not only is a public university, so they spend your tax dollars, they have to show you the books. But Colorado, and I said this before we went to break, they have a well-established, it's not even contested now. Colorado is cheap when it comes to how they spend for football. I'm remembering correctly, Wisconsin had a head coach that left to go to Oregon State because he said, Wisconsin ain't spending. What that Garrett, was it Anderson?
Gary Anderson.
Gary, yeah, he was a head coach. He had succeeded at, I want to say, San Jose. He was a good coach. And he got to Wisconsin. He's like, I'm going to the Big Ten, really? He showed up. He's like, why do we still have VCRs? What? Use paper clips, not Post-its. Why? Well, you can reuse the paper clips. Okay. So just clip the note there, and then we'll still have the paper clip after. Okay, I'll do that. He left for Oregon State, and they don't even play actual Power 5 football there. Sorry, not me. That's what the NFL says. So Colorado doesn't spend to the point where, like, the Utah AD is going, dude, why don't you spend? Dan, help me with math. Carl Durrell, who should have never been hired, just shouldn't have been. Carl Durrell was fired. Rough math. Now, he coached two full seasons, and he's 0-5 this year. I'm going to say three seasons, all right? So I'm going to round down, folks. Understand that the numbers we're about to arrive at are the pleasant, happy version of numbers for Colorado. If he worked three seasons, quote, for $3 million each, that would be $9 million, right?
Sure.
If he's getting a $9 million pay, oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, $9 million. It's about $11 million that he's been paid so far. So let me take that back. It was about $3.5 million per season. So it's about $11 million. And he gets a $9 million buyout, so 9 and 11 is 20. Dan, was he making $3.5 million a year, or was he making close to $7 million a year?
Yeah, he's making close to $3.5 million a year.
And then the payout means Colorado, who doesn't, quote, doesn't have money and doesn't spend money. This is the same math that we had at South Carolina with Will Muschamp. Well, we can afford a $4 million a year head coach, but not a $7 million head coach. Colorado's like, yeah, we can probably swing $3.5 million. So he signs that contract, and it's 3.6 whatever. So it's actually about $11 million that he's received so far. He will be able to claim an additional $9 million. So that's $20 million for 2.5 seasons of coaching. Colorado just spent $7 million a year on its head coach. South Carolina, when you add the $4 million that's in the how much are you getting paid? Well, I'm getting paid $4 million. Okay, but how much did you get? How much is Carl Durrell being paid? Well, he's being paid $3.5 million. Okay, how much did he get? Colorado tried to go cheap. South Carolina, I won't call it cheap, but you were getting, you knew who you were getting. You were getting Will Muschamp. Carl Durrell, and I know he wasn't your first choice. It was Kirby. You're playing footsie. They were like, Rick, you got to get on out of here. Kirby, full court press. That's allegedly how it happened. Colorado, who doesn't have money and won't spend it anyway, and they're cheap because of hiring a cheaper coach than would give them a legitimate chance to compete. Carl Durrell has received more than $20 million for two seasons and five games of coaching. The Colorado Buffaloes have a $7 million a year head coach, folks, but they only got a $3.5 million a year head coach for it. South Carolina Gamecocks, when you look at the buyout for Muschamp, they had about a $6.5 million a year head coach without getting a $6.5 million a year head coach. Paul Chryst, I will say this about – there were a lot of positive outcomes for him. there were – almost everything you can say about him, though, and I'm trying to – everything you can say about Paul Chryst at Wisconsin, almost all of the good came way, way early with the program that he took over. And in 2015, here are his first three seasons, 10 wins, 11 wins, 13 wins, drops to 8-5, bounces back to 10-4. COVID was COVID. They go 4-3, whatever. 9-4 last year, and clearly not where they're supposed to be this year. They're 2-3, and it was a bad, ugly loss to Illinois the other day. You lose to Ohio State, it happens. But Wisconsin has fired its head coach now. Its head coach, who is a former quarterback at the school. Scott Frost, former quarterback at the school. It doesn't matter now. If we have standards, and in the division where Wisconsin lives, they can have standards and expectations and goals because that's winnable. You got to make sure it's you doing the – you know what? Brett Bielema is looking around right now going, hey, can we win this thing? Wisconsin, if you were in the other division, like say you're James Franklin, give them credit. They won again. They got to win. That's all. I'll just say I was about to talk about what it wasn't. No, they got to win. But if you're – if you're James Franklin, you look around and think, we can have the best team that we've had since I arrived at Penn State, and we may finish third in the division. Now, we may go to the Rose Bowl. We may win the thing. We may play for the conference title because that could happen, too, in the right year. When we have a blocked field goal and scoop and score and it's the whiteout, we beat Ohio State. If that happens, well, it can be. But isn't that the exception? Because didn't I just name the exception because it's on the top? Hey, remember that year Ohio State made a big play and made it to the Rose Bowl? Yeah, which year? Hey, remember that year Penn State made that play? Grant Balfour. Wasn't it Grant Balfour? Grant Haley, I think it was. Trying to remember. So they made their play, Rose Bowl. Wisconsin, they don't have to go through that. Wisconsin doesn't have to make a great play to win the division. They just have to be really good. Two things to discuss with the head coach openings that we have now. And part of it is that this is becoming more normal. Folks, Paul Chryst and Carl Durrell were 24 hours from being September firings, which would give us five. And I mean five in like the highest level of game, folks. Power five jobs. Two of them in the Pac-12, two of them in the Big Ten, one in the ACC. So that's the first commentary is this is becoming normal. Do you know what the other commentary is? Dan said something before we went to break at the end of the hour. And he was commenting about Colorado and their situation and what they need to do now and their approach and their mindset. And he's right about everything he said. he had sort of an offhanded, you know, they kind of were going in the right direction with Mel Tucker. And if Mel Tucker were still there, when Dan said those were, if Mel Tucker were still there, in my mind, I blurted out, believe me, Michigan State wishes he were. $95 million. And the most horrifying thing is he ain't alone. Texas A&M, $95 million. I don't know Michigan State and their finances. There are certain programs I do. Like, I was told back when June was at Southern Methodist, I was told, Chuck, you don't understand the money they have. They have so much money, they don't even really measure it. Like, they have money for whatever they want. I was like, well, they're going to do some good stuff for him. I don't know Michigan State's money. I know that they owe Mel Tucker $95 million. Now, Texas A&M, all right, well, they got money. They tore down most of the stadium and rebuilt it for like $350 million. Hey, we want to rebuild the stadium. Here you go. We want to pay kids a whole bunch of money. Here you go. We want a $75 million. Well, here's your $75 million. Well, no, we want him to be a $95 million. Well, here's you too. We paying attention to what these standings are looking like around the Big Ten and the SEC? Because right now, things are not quite so great for Michigan State and Mel Tucker. They got beat by Maryland the other day, 27-13. And this looks like what I thought it would kind of be. Michigan State, they're 2-3 now, and they're 0-2. They just lost to Maryland. Like, do we understand they haven't gotten to the hard teams yet? They're 0-2 in conference, and conference hasn't started for them. And this is what I thought. See, this is what Michigan State is as a program. You can get to a window where you're really good. You're never going to be. I really don't believe Michigan State. 2 days, they're not a national championship caliber program. Like, I'm talking in a magical season. Okay, that can happen. But as far as getting into that window where we're 9 or 10 win and then a pop. Like, Wisconsin was in that window where you're thinking they're 9-10 wins every year and they could have a pop. Say, okay, maybe. Michigan State? They're at least the fourth best team in that division. Like, in August every year, I'm talking. $95 million. So, yeah, that way, you know, if Mel Tucker was still there, Michigan State, Lord Jesus Christ in heaven, give me a DeLorean. If there's one thing we could do, and I'll never ask you to go back in time never again. If we could just go back and not give him that extension before you played Ohio State. I say go back in time. Like, just go back before that game. Not even with him still at Colorado. Just don't give him the extension. It was like 2 days before Ohio State. And then Ryan Day is like, really? They just, okay, here you go. Boom. Points. 27-13. Got beat by the Turtles. We are going to take a break. Continue on us Monday next.
Now back to the Chuck Oliver Show on Southern Sports Today.
Rolling through hour two on a Monday. And Dabo just kind of looking around going, did y'all write our obit? Season on the brink. And by the way, in modern college football, it really is. You follow up 9-3 with 9-3, hey, tipping point for the program. I don't foresee a 9-3. Clemson remains undefeated. There was nothing easy about this, folks. 30-20, and they beat NC State, and they're at home. Folks, I said on Friday, here's NC State. Because if you hadn't watched them, I understand that, all right? If they're playing, I don't like East Carolina, I get it. I said they are a big, squarish, blockish team that is rugged and tough, and you're going to wind up maybe with a smelling salt at some point. I mean, that's just what Dave Doran's teams are going to be, and this is a really good version of it. That's who. With an NFL quarterback, brother. That's who Clemson won. I want to welcome on right now, guy who talks Clemson every single day. Get him online at Sports Illustrated talking Clemson as well. It is Will Vandervoort. Brother, how you doing today?
I'm doing good, Chuck. How you doing, man?
Doing all right. Talk about this matchup, because there was nothing easy. And I'm not just talking about the overall skill, but the profile of that NC State team. You're going to have anybody who plays them, it's going to get grimy and dirty, and you're going to have to work. And Clemson did it, and they did it better. I mean, they got the win, and they looked like the better team.
Yeah, Dave Doran, you know, at the end of the game, he talked about to the media, you know, telling us that, you know, Clemson was the better team. They controlled the lines of scrimmage. They beat them up front on both sides of the ball. And, you know, he's just like, there's nothing more you can say other than you tip your hat to them. And Clemson was the better team on this night. But you're right. That's how you got to beat NC State. They're a very physical team on both sides of the line of scrimmage. They get after it. You know, even his teams that haven't been as good, they're always physical. You know, they always, you know, going to hit you. And that was the case the other night, but Clemson came with that same attitude and mindset. And, you know, they kind of remembered last year, and they wanted to kind of get back at that. And they brought it just the same way. And, you know, you give credit to Clemson's we knew Clemson's defensive line is one of the best. But I tell you what people aren't talking about is how well that Clemson defensive front – I mean, offensive line played. Because they, a lot of times, you know, they didn't have it. They only had five guys blocking, and NC State couldn't get to them all night. I mean, and that's why they were able to use their tight ends more than probably people thought they were going to.
Talk DJU, because and I applauded the man. I don't know if it was a Fitbit or he got a Stairmaster or something, but he was like, "Hey, everybody, I lost a bunch of weight." I was like, "That's fine. Mm-hmm. Don't turn the ball over." He is not turning the ball over, and this looks like a smaller version of what I was expecting last year to be like the daily fantasy sports stat stuffer every Saturday. That looks like the QB we thought would take over for Trevor Lawrence, in my opinion.
Yeah, that's the guy everybody was expected last year, but, you know, it's been well documented what happened last year and maybe what led to some of his problems.
Yep.
It wasn't all his fault. You heard Dabo just relentlessly talk about that. It wasn't all DJ's fault. I think that's come to some fruition. Now, yes, he did lose 30 pounds, and he's healthier. That is allowing him to be more mobile and be more of a force in the running game. His knee as well. You know, he had a bum knee, which they said, you know, he even said that probably had something to do with the weight. He had a broken finger that he played with last year as well. But I think the most important thing of why he's playing well is the offensive line and the wide receivers are playing well and the emergence of their tight ends, which, by the way, I want to say those tight ends have been there, but the offensive line has been so bad they haven't been able to use them because they have to keep them in the block. And people are now seeing, like, where did Clemson have to get these tight ends? They had them. They just couldn't use them the way they wanted to until now. So it's the offensive line and those wide receivers, as Dabo says, those group of people around him are much better this year. And that subsequently is why DJ's playing well too. And he's improved in his own right. And so it's you're seeing it right now with this offensive team. They're a really good football team on the offensive side. And they're and just give Brandon Streeter credit too. I thought he called a well of a game the other night and really kept NC State's defense off balance.
All right, let's talk about some of those receivers, because I mean, I like a lot what's going on out there, and I see Bo Collins turn into a man, and Ngata, maybe this is his time. We know what Shipley is. You mentioned Davis Allen. Let's talk about two kids that I didn't think we would. Antonio Williams and Adam Randall. How is Randall coming back from the injury? But then Antonio Williams, how is that kid who was not very physically imposing, let's say, how has he wormed his way all the way to the top of the depth chart so he's out there as much as anybody else, given all of the monster recruits that have come into that program?
Man, the only thing you can say about Antonio Williams, he's just one of those special players. I was talking to one of the recruiting analysts the other night at the game, and they were telling me, you know, when they were watching him play in high school and stuff, they said this kid, wherever he goes, is going to be special. And I think we're seeing that. And he is a big difference in this offense, being that now Clemson's got a legitimate slot guy. And, you know, he went across the middle the other night and picked up a first down. That's something Clemson didn't have last year. You know, he took a hit too, but he got right back up, you know. And he's been a big weapon, there's no doubt. And, you know, what he brings to that wide receiving core and just, you know, his ability to make plays in space reminds me, you know, a lot. I think he's a cross between Amari Rodgers and Artavis Scott. He's been a pleasant surprise for Clemson. Dabo, I remember Dabo telling us that they thought he could come in and compete and become a starter right away for him, and that's what he's done. And then, you know, Adam Randall, I think, is coming along. He missed the first few games because he's coming off that ACL injury.
Yep.
But he made a couple plays the other night and made some plays in the Wake Forest game. So he's coming along. They still think he's just going to be pretty special. So those guys right there, and that's kind of pushing guys like Bo Collins and E.J. Williams. They're both playing much better now as well. And so you got – and then Nagata, he made a big play right at the start of the game. So they got some weapons out there, some guys that can make some plays. And then you throw in those tight ends with Jake Brenningstuhl and Davis Allen, and they're both making plays each week. Last year I went and looked it up before the game. Last year NC State, when they played NC State, they had two targets to the tight end. Neither one of those passes were caught, and that was and only one tight end played. The other night they had 12 targets and there was 8 catches, and you know the rest of that story. Yep. So it's much different offense than what we saw last year.
Last thing, and we got to be quick. We got about a minute. Where is Brzee, injury wise, health wise, everything? Just to see, just bopping along 100%. What's up?
No, he's actually had a kidney issue. Last week, he had to go to the hospital. Obviously he didn't play the other night. The Dabo says that they got good news back on, I think Friday afternoon, they got good news back on his health. So they're just going to bring him back slowly. So I'll be surprised if you see him this week. I think more likely they'll probably see him get back in play, that following week at Florida State. I'll be surprised, but right now he's recuperating and just trying to get himself healthy.
And so the knee injury from earlier, that's 100% fine. He's had the emotional situation. I mean, the tragedy, honestly, the family tragedy, and now what he's dealing with. I mean, that's just a lot for a kid. And I still look at him. I think he's 20 years old. And
yeah, that's right.
Because he looks the way he does, I'm like, man, it has been one thing after another with him. I'm just kind of wondering where the young man's at. So I appreciate it as always, Will. We'll talk to you soon, brother.
All right. Thanks, Chuck. We'll talk to y'all next time.
From Sports Illustrated, it is Will Vandervoort. And it's just been one thing after another with him. And you're just wondering kind of where he is, right? Because keeping all of that, he bounced back last week, but keeping all of that in perspective and still being able to go out there, oh, yeah, and be an NFL defensive tackle on Saturdays is just not the easiest thing in the world for him.
Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
The Fan is ready for Brave season. Are you?
3-1 smoked high in the air, deep center field, and heading for the horizon. A home run by Olsen.
We're streaming every game of the Braves 2024 season free on the 680 The Fan app.
So make sure you download it now and don't miss a pitch of the Braves this season. The king of college football, no matter where you go, with a new Southern Sports Today app. Catch the best college football conversation in the South everywhere with the SST live stream and daily podcast. Download it now at the App Store and the Google Play Store. Now more of the best college football talk in the country. It's the Chuck Oliver Show.
Chuck Oliver Show, rolling along on a Monday. Appreciate everybody getting in here for your college football conversation. Going to head out to Oxford, Mississippi, and on the heels of Ole Miss improving to 5-0, folks, and they're now into conference play. Big win at home over Kentucky, previously undefeated, and at the time, number 7, Kentucky. 22-19 was the final. Ole Miss gets the win. It was probably not exactly how you would have envisioned if you would have said, hey, what's Kentucky Ole Miss going to look like 5 weeks ago? But it's how it is, and Ole Miss continues to impress. I want to welcome on right now from the Clarion Ledger, it is Nick Suss. Nick, how you doing today, man?
I'm doing pretty well, Chuck. Happy to be back.
I want to throw, I'm not an Ole Miss grad or a booster or anybody. I don't rep them, but I want to throw them an even extra bone because the presence of Chris Rodriguez and the fact that Jordan Wright and everybody else was back and there were no huge injuries or whatever – That was the best Kentucky team of the season to this point, and I don't think that's a question. That's the team that Ole Miss got after the other day. Talk about how that unfolded on a pretty special afternoon there in Oxford.
Yeah, it's wild in retrospect, and it's wild in the present to think that if you go back to December 1st or wherever Lane Kiffin was hired in 2019 and say, in three short years, not only is this team going to be winning top 10 games, but they're going to be winning top 10 games where the offense doesn't look particularly good. I don't think you'd see how it got to this point, but this is a complete 180 from the Ole Miss we saw last year, the Ole Miss we saw 2 years ago, and certainly the Ole Miss we saw before Kiffin arrived on campus. It's just a complete transition. This defense seems like it is confident, seems like it's swarming. I haven't seen too many defenses that play with a three-man front, play with six DBs on the field like Ole Miss does, but constantly live in the opposing backfield. It's a really impressive group that top to bottom with depth on defense, you have to look at, oh, there's four guys who can get after the quarterback. There's three linebackers and a hurt guy, Kari Coleman, who hasn't played in 2 weeks, who can secure the tackle. There are 7 to 8 DBs that you can trust at any time. This is an Ole Miss team that looks a lot more like the 2014-2015 teams that Ole Miss was winning with defense and occasional big plays on offense than the team last year that got to a Sugar Bowl with Matt Corral's heroics.
And I want to talk a little bit more about that defense, because you're right. It's what's the phrase? Positional ambiguity.
Yeah.
Otis Reese is listed as a safety. He can play in the box. He can come on. He can do a lot of stuff. And he is just one of those guys, like Jared Ivey, another one of the transfers. The quote was, and I'm going to try to get it right, from Kentucky's OC was, if you blitz us, we're going to light you up. Ole Miss was after Will Levis, and he made some plays, but Ole Miss got after Will Levis most of the afternoon. Talk about, in particular, the pass pressure.
Yeah, when I think about the – Ole Miss doesn't blitz very much, but
no.
When I think about the pass rush, the play that stands out was the safety in the – I can't remember if it was the first or second quarter, but certainly the first half.
The second quarter, yeah.
Second quarter. It was such an interesting play where they had three down linemen on the field. I know one of them was Tavius Robinson, one of them was Jared Ivey. I can't remember who the nose tackle was. But Cedric Johnson, their best edge rusher, was stand-up middle linebacker that play. And he twisted, I think, around the right edge. Tavius came off the left edge. It ended up being a 5 or 6 man pressure where Kentucky didn't know where the pressure would come from. And Levis looked like it. I mean, he didn't look lost, but he looked surprised by that look. This is a defense that's, I'm not going to say throw the kitchen sink at you, because most of the time they're getting pressure with Cedric Johnson, Tavius Robinson, J.J. Pegues, Jared Ivey, who's ever on the field as a three-man rush. But this pass rush, when especially when Kari Coleman gets healthy, he was so electric as a pass rusher the first 2 weeks of the season, you can have people come at you from multiple angles. You can have some of the players I haven't mentioned, like Taiwan Malone or Katie Hill or some of these players who are starting to contribute a little bit more, spell your guys on first and second down so they can pin their ears back on third down. It's just a solid group. It's a team that last year Sam Williams was the sack guy and everyone else had a different role. Now, short of that guy who's a surefire top three round NFL pick, they're playing much more cohesively, and the results are speaking for themselves.
Yeah, another, like Troy Brown is a guy that I think Otis Reese may actually be bigger than him. But,
yeah.
I mean, you're talking about just a runner. And I always try to separate, Nick, a Sunday guy, because people, we let that color our perception of how great they may be as a Saturday player. So strictly in the vein of what they're doing on Saturdays right now, let's go back seven, because I'm sure you had read like everybody else, and you'd even watch Barry and Brown and Key and Tavion Robinson. Oh yeah, I hear they're more explosive. You got to see them in person. That is, I've called them this a very fast, twitchy group out there, which is unlike what we're used to with Kentucky. And Ole Miss, Brown got loose on one. Other than that, Ole Miss shut them down, all three of them. Talk about the back end.
I think that when you look at the back end of Ole Miss's secondary, Kentucky is kind of like a reprieve for them. They practice against Ole Miss's offense every day. They played Tulsa last week. They're used to being on the field at 80, 90 snaps a game. This defense was only on the field for, I think, 63 plays against Kentucky. That meant A.J. Finley played every snap. Davison Igbinosin played every snap. De'Andre Prince played every snap. Isheem Young played just about every snap. Tysheem Johnson played just about every snap. Otis Reese, who had to serve a targeting suspension in the first half so he couldn't play, played just about every snap in the second half. You had a chance for your best guys to not only be on the field every play, but be rested and take breathers between snaps. And I think the result of that is, yeah, Berrion Brown, the kick returns, he was electric, and he had two long plays, one of which was a screen with a missed tackle. Other than that, these guys didn't get loose, and you give credit to Igbinosin, who is such polished player, as a true freshman, who is playing incredibly well as a tackler, not just a guy in coverage. Isheem Young, Tysheem Johnson have been awesome this year. We've talked at length multiple times about how good we think A.J. Finley is. But I'll also highlight Ladarius Tennyson, who I've joked for about 3 weeks now. He might be their best linebacker.
And I was about to say, I don't know what he is either.
Yeah, and it's a group that it's weird that we can spend 15 minutes focusing on the challenges of facing Ole Miss's defense, but they've got 16, 17 guys that I think could have been starters on last year's team, and obviously a lot of them were starters on last year's team. But last year's defense was no slouch. That was a pretty good Ole Miss defense, and this group just seems to have raised the standard.
Wrapping up Nick Suss, get him on Twitter, at Nick Suss, and then read him at the Clarion Ledger. He talks Ole Miss and does a really good job of it. All right, I think I'm correct. If we get in the DeLorean and go back to like a year ago, Quinshon Judkins would have been a 5'9", three-star running back from Pike Road, Alabama. Yep. That's not Hoover. That's not Valdosta. That's not IMG. How has that kid turned into a touchdown machine in this conference? Because my understanding is Lane Kiffin saw him and was like, yeah, I don't know what your rating is. You're my priority.
Yeah, no, that's pretty much the story. And Pike Road's an interesting story. I think it's the fastest growing city in Alabama. So that high school opened his freshman year. It was a 2A high school. They were working out outside. They didn't have an indoor weight room, so they were working out on mud tarps. By the time his senior year rolled around, that's a 6A school when they go 15-0, largely on his back. He was the state championship game MVP. He's just such a thunderous downhill runner. He's very decisive. I think that maybe he doesn't have that top level burst that some teams are looking for, or that polish in the passing game quite yet that prevented him from being a five star. But I was covering LSU when they were recruiting Clyde Edwards-Helaire, and that's kind of the vibe I'm getting off of Judkins, not stylistically, but just, oh, if this kid was 2 inches taller, he's the number one running back recruit in the country. But he wasn't, and he got to fall to be a three-star, and a team got to take a chance on him. But Kiffin was at that state championship game and thought, oh, he can start. Like, that's a kid that can start. And, I mean, I looked this up yesterday. He already has more rushing touchdowns than any SEC freshman since 2019, and he's played five games. That is remarkable. We'll see how long he can continue it. We'll see if Zach Evans gets healthier and Ulysses Bentley gets healthier, if he continues to be the feature back. But at this point, if you're averaging 109 yards per game or whatever he's averaging, let him cook.
Yeah, and you mentioned Bentley. Did he even play on Saturday? I know Evans did. He got in the end zone. How healthy are those two?
Evans is, I would probably say, 70% there. You could tell he was a little bit off twitch, but Bentley's working with a wrist injury. He's still got a sling on. I think he'll be back in the next probably 2 weeks, but that's just one where he hurt his wrist against Georgia Tech. Hasn't played since.
All right, last thing. And you and I, we don't play, we don't coach, so we can talk about this. Respect every opponent. Okay, we said it. At Vanderbilt this weekend. Is that a get some stuff done sort of afternoon? You have to win the game. Respect. You're on the road in the conference, but is that a, hey, let's get some stuff done, like what they meant to against Georgia Tech, but it got out of hand?
I think so. And I've covered Lane Kiffin long enough to know that these next two games, being Vanderbilt and Auburn, you're staring down the barrel of a potential 7-0 start, potentially being in the top five, top six in the country. That's all great. This is a put some stuff on tape kind of month. This is a give LSU and A&M and Arkansas and Alabama stuff they have to prepare for. So sort of month. It's figure out the passing game, figure out how to get your weapons going, because if there's any disappointment about this Ole Miss team, it's been the receiving core. It's been the inability to get open downfield for anybody other than Malik Heath. I mean, I told you 2 months ago that Ole Miss was going to beat Kentucky and Jonathan Mingo had one catch and Jalen Robinson didn't play. You wouldn't have figured out how it happened. But
and Michael Trigg averaging like 4 yards a catch. He can be downfield, can he?
He can, and it's if you were in the press box, you would have seen this. There was that 3rd and 15 play, I think in the fourth quarter, maybe third quarter, where Ole Miss really, really needed it, and they subbed Trigg onto the field. And I turned to the reporter next to me and said, they told Trigg to run 15 yards and stop. And that's exactly what happened. He runs 15 yards, he stops, Dart hits him for a first down. They just got to figure out how to work these guys in. Some of it seems to be developmental. Some of it's Trigg takes a classic Saban star chewing because he doesn't get lined up properly on a 4th and 1.
That happened too.
Dart. I mean, that sort of stuff, they got to figure out how to work these guys in. But your veterans, Malik Heath, that's a fifth-year senior, he goes for 100 yards against Kentucky. You've had Mingo play pretty well. It's the other guys. It's the Triggs and the Jalen Robinson's got to get healthy. And J.J. Henry, Braylon Brown, Jalen Knox. There's a lot of guys that the hype was big in the preseason, but they have not been able to figure anything out beyond Heath and Mingo, and they got to get that going if they want to have a two-dimensional attack.
All right, last thing for you, Jonathan Cruz. Where did he come from, and how is he from distance, do you know? Because he looks solid. I mean, we're still only 5 games in, but if it comes down to cutting time, high 40s into the 50s, how is he from distance reputationally?
Well, he hit a 53-yard kick against Kentucky, but more impressively or more notably, he came from Charlotte. He was another transfer portal.
That was it. That was it.
His freshman year at Charlotte, he hit a 50-plus yarder as a game winner to beat FAU, where Lane Kiffin was coaching. So Kiffin had a firsthand experience of what that kid can do in the crunch time. It's obviously an interesting situation with Caden Costa serving his suspension. He won't be eligible to play again until the Mississippi State game, I believe. So it'll be interesting come Egg Bowl season, if Cruz is going to hold on to the job or if Costa gets it back. But through 5 games, Cruz has at least seemed up to the task.
Oh, absolutely. And, I mean, everything that's normal, and he hit the big one the other day, and he's made some in 40s, but you wonder as you get into the season and some of these, you know, as you said, LSU, A&M, et cetera, how that's going to work out. Nick, appreciate you as always, brother. Thank you so much.
Anytime, man.
Nick Suss from Clarion Ledger. We're going to take a break. Continue. More of the Chuck Oliver Show next.
More college football talk with the king of college football. It's the Chuck Oliver Show on Southern Sports Today.
From the 10, jet motion, Coy Moore looking to pass, and it's intercepted! Harold Perkins, can you believe that? Auburn got cute, and they paid the price. Pick off Harold Perkins.
Joe Tess, God bless you, and I mean that. It's a fun job. He approaches it as it's a job. Every game is the Orange Bowl for the national championship, including LSU 21-17. They get the dub over Auburn. That game, it was 17-0, and then it wasn't. There was the – when we've talked about this earlier in the program, what went on there, but just one – lack of big play after another once Auburn had its 17 points, and I'm giving LSU full credit for that. Now, understand, here is where LSU stands. LSU, they got the win, okay? Conference win, division win, they're still rolling. LSU was +3 in turnovers against a team that almost can't score. And it was a final minute, last play sort of thing. So, LSU right now, they got more trouble in the little to deal with against the backdrop of a win. If you're Eli Drinkwitz, you have some specific points to build on. following the loss to Kansas State, following the loss to Auburn, following the loss to Georgia. Got some positives. I don't use that. Dan, do you ever even use the phrase moral victory? Like, you played sports. It has zero victory to, value to me. Your opinion of moral victories?
Not a big fan.
Okay, so Mizzou, here's what I call a moral. Do you know what, when we say moral, as a moral victory, here is what I believe a moral victory actually is. Following that loss, your team actually does feel more confident playing better opponents. Georgia's a way better opponent than Missouri. That's not a moral victory. What I saw was Missouri with two really good chances for touchdowns that became field goals, including one where the kid is caught at the 1.5 and he's going forward. If it were just like a normal fall forward, it might have been a touchdown. Instead, he was down at the 1, and then they were at the 6, and then it was a field goal, and Missouri's getting a moral victory. LSU didn't get a moral victory. LSU won that thing, so credit. Did I mention I'm ready for Kayshon Boutte to start having a great season? Like, I really, really am ready for that kid to start having a great season. So LSU gets the win in part because, as you heard, Coy Moore, who it was not a right out of the gate sort of thing, but he has now developed into – he has a role, and I mean a role in the top four, which in modern offense means you play a lot. The production is not probably going to be so over the top just because of the Auburn situation at quarterback, which right now is – let's say it's a developing, emerging situation. There were some passes earlier in the game where Robbie Ashford, he really looked on point with it. There were passes later. There were some passes. The ball looked like a helicopter blade coming out of his hand. So that's just not – it's an SEC opponent. We're just talking with Nick Suss. We respect everybody, but you're playing Vanderbilt. What are you going to do? But we say we respect every opponent. You're playing an SEC opponent. You have to be able to make plays at quarterback. And if you're going to win anything of substance, it has to be a guy that you're winning because of. I've talked about that concept a lot. So Auburn loses, but LSU does get the dub. Now, like I said, against the backdrop of that, you have a lot to work on yourself. The reason I believe it was such a struggle is Auburn's defense is real. And I have said that since before the season started. That defense, they'll knock you the other way. They'll do it. That's real. They're aggressive and they're physical, and there are NFL guys, multiple of them, all over that defense. So LSU got hit a little bit, but against that, down 17, nothing on the road. They started making plays, including, like I said, Harold Perkins there as well. Dan, how are you doing today?
Oh, man, I'm all right. And you know what I think of with moral victories? Remember the leaked footage that got out years ago, which it wouldn't shock me if Craig James or somebody decided to get this out of Mike Leach. And he's talking to his team in the locker room. And it was a couple of weeks after they just lost to Texas. And he's mocking people, saying, oh, you played them close. And I can't say the actual lines that he did, but he said, blank playing them close, we lost the game. And that's exactly what I think of with that, is usually when you think, oh, you know, it's a moral victory. No, it's a loss. That's all it is. I mean, we had every single opportunity to be able to win that game, should have won that game, and could have won that game. All of those things mixed into the same formula there that you come away from it saying, yeah, we lost. Yep. There's nothing good about it. I think for the first time ever in my life, I actually rooted against LSU at a certain point in that game.
Oh, wait a minute. You started hate watching.
I not necessarily started hate watching. It was more or less of as being like, you know, yourself an Auburn fan.
I know what it is, brother.
No, it would be that you're watching your coach make these decisions and saying, bro, I understand that you probably realize that you're fired, but do you really have to go scorched earth, you know, Leroy Jenkins and all of it right here, and just completely run right into the fire with some of these play calls? Like that trick play with Coy Moore, it's like, don't get cute, man. Points right there help you stay in the game. Points right there maybe even help you win the game. And instead, we're trying to get cute. We're running trick plays because the coach is over here saying, hey, screw it. I'm probably out of here in a few weeks anyway.
Wraps it up on a Monday. David on the ones and twos. Tremendous job. Dan, Rolodex to the stars. If you don't know what a Rolodex is, look it up and then understand Dan has that to the stars. That's how we get guests like we had today. Appreciate everybody coming on. Appreciate everybody listening. All I need, 22 hours. Recharge the batteries. Be back this time tomorrow talking more college football right here on Chuck Oliver Show.
Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
Is there chaos in your closet?
Look, Blouse, you've got some nerve hanging there like that.
I can't help it. I'm jammed in here next to this suit.
Hey, I'm a three-piece, all right? Which means I need a little more room.
You've got a lot of attitude for a linen suit.
I'm a polyester blend, sweetheart. There needs to be room for men's clothes, too.
Hi, I'm Christina, and at Artisan Custom Closets, we help families organize and simplify their closets with customized storage solutions. See what's possible for your home at artisancustomclosets.com and then call us for a free in-home consultation.